Hi, Dawn.
Hello, Lauren.
How are you?
Good morning to you.
Good
Lovely
morning.
To finally speak to you after watching all your videos and CDs and things. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. How about you?
Good, yes, I'm fine. Do you feel settled in your new abode?
Well, not completely, no.
No. It'll take a bit of time, won't it?
Yeah. I mean, the center itself, you know, the building itself, the guest rooms are all in pretty good shape. Everything's pretty comfortable. I'm still sleeping on the floor because I've been putting everything I've had into getting things for my guests set up.
Yeah. Probably not bad for your back and your posture, though, is it?
Well, I don't know. It's not very comfortable.
Futon mattress.
Well, when I got here, there were some old there were some pieces of foam, basically, you know, foam mattresses. Calling it a mattress is really stretching it. I finally did get a mattress. I just don't have a bed yet, so it's not too bad now.
Okay.
But I don't have any other furniture in there.
Well, it's amazing how little you can do with when push comes to shove.
Yeah, it's true. Absolutely true.
Quite liberating, really.
Anyway. Well, you know, it's funny because just a brief word on that. I went through way back 20 years ago. I went through a reversal. I've had a couple now, and I thought, okay, you know, I think I'm getting the message here that I got myself deeply in debt in my 20s. I was investing in real estate in apartment buildings with a partner. And we were buying things because we could, not because they made sense.
Uh-huh.
You know, the credit market was easy. I was actually in the business of arranging financing, and I was arranging financing for us.
Yeah.
And we were buying these things that we couldn't really support, and we got ourselves in a bit of trouble.
Mm.
So I realized eventually I needed to sell my house. I wasn't forced to, but I decided to sell my house and pay off as much as I could. And I wound up getting rid of a lot of stuff.
Mm.
And I thought, okay, you know, that's the idea is I can't have any stuff. Stuff is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually kept one chair. I had a chair that I'd grown up with.
Mm.
And I kept it. I wound up deciding to move from this house, which wasn't huge, about 200 meters. I mean, big enough for one person, onto a boat, which was much smaller.
Yeah.
And I put the chair on the boat. I wasn't living on it yet. And a week later, the chair was stolen.
Oh.
It was actually worth quite a bit of money. Oh. And I thought, the universe is telling me that I'm not ready to own anything yet.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it took a while for me to realize that the problem wasn't stuff. The problem was attachment to stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You can own everything as long as you're not attached to it.
Yes. Yeah, that's a very good point, actually. I'm studying Buddhist philosophy,
mm-hmm.
and we're just doing the section on attachment at the moment, and it's exactly what you just said. It doesn't matter how much stuff you've got.
No.
Even the Dalai Lama admits to having four watches, but he's not attached to them.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, and that's a key piece. I've studied Buddhism for many, many years. The key piece to Buddhist philosophy. Because, you know, ultimately, you want to be happy, you need to learn non-attachment. Anyway, what aren't you attached to talking about today?
Oh, well, I have loads of questions. And I suppose the first thing... Well, some questions, some observations. I mean, there's just so many contradictions. It can easily make your head explode.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you read... do you consider yourself a natural hygienist, by the way? Or a fruitarian? Or a frugivore, rather?
Well, I suppose I'm a hygienist. I mean, I don't usually identify myself that way because... I don't think that's necessarily a useful thing to do.
Uh-huh.
Most people don't understand what it means, or misunderstand what it means, and so, yeah. I mean, I don't really talk about it, but yes, that's basically what I'm coming
from. Because for the last 6 months, I've been reading everything I can get my hands on from natural hygienists.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm coming from a background of a lifelong vegetarian who became vegan, who became raw, who trained as a living foods practitioner, so a Hippocrates background, to natural hygiene. And to me, this seems like the final piece in the jigsaw.
Yeah, no question.
So there's still a lot of contradictions. So,
Okay, go ahead.
Go on.
I'm sorry, go ahead. Well, I think when we see contradictions, because it's, I mean, there are no contradictions in nature. So if there are any contradictions, apparently, then it's because we're not understanding something correctly. And there are many people out there who profess to be natural hygienists or profess to understand natural hygiene, but don't.
I'll just give you one example of a contradiction.
Sure.
You know, I'm a very active person.
Yeah.
But I've tried to create the perfect environment where I can spend most of my time in bed, as you recommended.
Right.
And in bed, I read this book by a frugivore. I think his name is Dr. Morse. He wrote the detox book. And in that, it said, when you're fasting, you're not an invalid. You've got to keep the lymph and the blood moving.
Yeah, that's idiotic.
So you should get up and you should work
he's
out.
He's not a hygienist. It's
no,
idiotic.
No, he's not.
So, again, listen, I mean, it's... And here's the thing. I mean, you know, you're familiar with the concept of the bell curve.
Yeah.
Okay. In any human endeavor, you're going to see this kind of a distribution. So, you know, where the great majority of people... Yeah, so the vast majority of people are going to be very average, for instance, in their understanding. And some people are going to be really terrible, and only a few people are going to be exceptional. And I don't mean to brag, but... You know, I've been doing this a long time. I have a knack for understanding these things. And I tell you one thing. I mean, anytime I see something that where there's an apparent contradiction, I know that I'm not understanding it, as I was suggesting before. There are no contradictions. So here's the place I start from, Don, and you can do the same thing. You know, the first place is you need to understand that nature is always perfect. What does every single animal species do when sick enough or bad enough injured? Lay down and not move. They've got lymph. They've got a circulatory system.
Yeah.
It's not a problem. It doesn't stop working. I've taken more than 2,000 people through the process, and the people who get the best results are the people who do the least. Every single time.
Yeah. Well, I proved it for myself, as I do when I come across most contradictions that I perceive. And I thought, right, okay, I'll get up. There's a pile of clutter in the corridor, New Year, spring cleaning, that sort of thing. An hour and a half later, I felt my heart was really stressed and working too hard.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you know, let me say something else about this, because... I appreciate your desire to prove it to yourself, to understand it. You want to be careful because, you know, what often happens, I find myself frequently having conversations where someone says, I just had one, I'm having one, I'm in the middle of one via email, which is a difficult way to do this. And I'll tell you a very quick story, but a fairly well-known raw foodist posted something about having injured herself. But being active anyway. I mean, it's absurd, frankly. She fractured her foot, and she said, I think I'm going to play softball anyway. And I wrote to her and said, hey, you know, listen, that's really not a good idea. You know, you want to give your foot a chance to heal. You need to stay off it as much as possible. And frankly, you know, you may want to try fasting. She wrote back and said, listen, you know, I don't mean to offend, but I've done some fasting, and it was bad for me. And I wrote back and said, well, you know, that's interesting. I don't know what to say except that every other species does it. I've taken thousands of people through it. Everyone's been better off for it. And it makes me wonder if, you know, what happened isn't what you think happened. And you know, so often when in a conversation like that, people will say, if we're speaking, they'll say, you know, don't argue with with my experience. And I'm saying, no, I'm not arguing with your experience. The question is, the interpretation of the experience. And so in this case, I'm glad it worked out the way it did, but often what happens is the opposite. And let me explain. If someone is very active while fasting, they're using all their body's energy to move around and do whatever they're choosing to do, they're not there isn't much energy available for cleansing and healing. And so people often feel much better. And they think, this is a better way to do this. I feel better if I'm active. Well, yeah, but that's only because you're not actually doing what you're attempting to do. You know, if the point is to cleanse and heal, and symptoms are evidence that the body is cleansing and healing, then the more that we have going on, the more likely we are to have symptoms come up. Now, it's often true that there aren't any significant symptoms other than tiredness and weakness. But if someone is being physically active, they may actually feel less tired and less weak. They may be running on adrenaline, they may be running on muscle, but they're not going to be cleansing and healing nearly as much, and therefore not going to be having the same kinds of symptoms. But most people would misunderstand this and think, oh, I'm better off this way.
Yeah, I mean, touching on the weakness, that surprised me. I mean, I feel weak as a kitten most of the time, and I'm so conscious of my heart. It feels really tight. My chest feels really tight.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, even showering is exhausting.
Well, you may recall, I'm sure I said this in one of the videos, don't shower any more than you have to. It is exhausting. It uses a lot of energy. Most people have no idea how much energy they're using, because they're just used to doing it.
Mm.
But it is, you know, I encourage people, if they're willing to not shower at all.
Yeah. No, I'm sort of showering every third day because it is, as I say, exhausting.
Yeah.
But
well, I would cut it back. I mean, really. I've got people that go weeks without showering.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting.
It's not necessary in any way. It doesn't help you cleanse faster. It doesn't do anything for you. It just uses energy that's now not available for what you're trying
to do. That was one of my questions, actually. But before I go on to my question, I just wanted to ask you a little funny personal thing, if I may.
Sure.
Do you have an earring in your left lobe, or is that a freckle? Because watching your DVDs, I can't work it out.
It's an emerald.
Ah, lovely. Okay.
Yeah. It's been there a long time, you know, and it's funny, by the way. I mean, how some people like look for things to, you know, to have a problem with. I can't tell how many people have said, "Why do you have an earring?" "Because I like it." "Well, that's not good for you. It's not good for you to have metal in your body." I'm like, probably not. But you know what? I'm dealing with an okay thing.
Yeah. No, I like earrings, but I kept looking and thinking, you don't look like the sort of guy who'd have an earring. It must be a freckle. And I thought, I'm just going to come out with it and ask you.
Well, you know, I used to wear a ponytail, and I had a beard for a long time. And the reason that both of them disappeared is because they started to be more gray than black.
Okay. All right. And I also just wanted to say, I don't think you're thin either. I think you're slim. Thin people don't look well, but slim.
No, exactly.
Good.
No, in fact, you know, what's true, Don, is that this happens a lot, too. You know, when you see a face that has relatively little fat, you see all the bones, bone structure of the face, people think, oh, too skinny.
Mm-hmm.
Usually what happens, when the first time clients, I mean, many people never speak up, but the first time many people have seen me with my shirt off, they go, oh, you're much stronger looking than I thought.
Yeah,
I'm not skinny at all. I'm actually very little fat, so it comes across as looking pretty thin.
Yeah, and also that kind of feedback, I think, says more about the person giving the feedback.
Sure.
Okay, you mentioned about showering and things, and that was one of my questions, actually, about, I don't really recall you talking much about the skin, and skin is the biggest organ for elimination. So skin brushing, I know you said not to sauna, which I thought, well, that's fine, because I'm pretty exhausted when I sauna anyway, so it makes sense not to do it when I'm fasting.
Exactly.
But I had thought perhaps during a fast you'd be helping the skin eliminate toxins, but maybe not.
Well, you know, again, this comes back, and I insist on keeping everything connected. You know, you're going to find few, if any, exceptions where I'll say, okay, well, even though, you know, in this case, do something different. And so I believe firmly in my, you know, again, I have a lot of experience here. Not too many people with more experience on the planet, but it is a few, but not so many, that the best we can do is to get out of the body's way. We don't need to assist it. You know, we don't need to help it along in any way. It knows exactly what it needs to do, and it doesn't need our help. And so, you know, in fact, I mean, I went from, understand that when I started this journey, and until I was long into the journey, there was no internet, or I was a little bit late coming to it. And, you know, back in the old days, not everybody was online, because although the internet was available for a little while, before everybody was online, because not everyone was online, it wasn't such a big deal. So it's been, I mean, I've been studying nutrition for 35 years. I started making radical changes to my diet 30 years ago. You know, I came to this stuff I'm doing now 25 years ago, roughly. So it's been a long time in coming. And that way back then, I mean, I worked through everything. I was on my own. There was no internet. I didn't really know, you know, I started out with from a conventional medical standpoint, as you've heard me say. And then I thought, okay, well, I'll try this and I'll try that. And it wasn't consistent. And it didn't necessarily make sense from today's perspective. But I went through a long period of skin brushing. You know, and then I thought, well, wait a second. If my body just needs me to get out of its way, why is this necessary? What is this really doing? You know, does my lymphatic system really need me to go find something to brush it with? Would we be doing that in nature? I don't think so. And so I've had wonderful success without doing anything at all. You know, I do when I shower, I do use a washcloth and very gently, with no soap or anything else, just water. Very gently wash my face and my body, but nothing more than that, ever.
Okay. All right. Good. Thank you. The other question, they're not in any order. They're quite random. I've just been writing them down as I've been watching your DVDs and tapes.
Yeah, sure.
I know that previously on Facebook we've talked about 80-10-10. Mm-hmm. And that has thrown up some contradictions as I perceive them. But I noticed you said, you know, that you're happy just eating fruit rather than the 80-10-10, which is every time you eat fruit, you've got to eat greens to balance it so you don't get this sugar spice spike.
Right.
And you've got to do vigorous, well, to quote, strenuous exercise on this fruit regime. However, you're saying quite a different thing. You know, if you've got greens or you fancy greens, you have greens. If you don't, it's not a problem. Just eat the fruit.
Yeah. Well, and let me clarify again, because that is absolutely true. That's what I do. And I probably eat on average one or two salads a week, no more than that. I do not eat greens with every meal. I do not eat greens with most meals. I mean, the last week, or maybe two, I haven't had greens at all because I've had no desire for them. And once you see there are only two things that greens provide you with more of than fruit does, and that's protein and minerals. However, our needs for protein, not only are our needs for protein tiny, but consuming more protein than we need actually leads to disease.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, this is another area that people just don't understand, and it's sometimes I feel like I'm banging my head against a wall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I'm on a lecture tour leaving in 9 days, be in Arizona and California, and I'm hearing back from the woman in California who's still setting up events. I'm going there second, so I'm not going to be there for a month. And she's saying, well, you know, these people say they don't think they want you to come because they don't believe in fasting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, first of all, I'm not there to do a fasting talk. I'm talking about creating perfect health, right? And 20 years raw, having worked hands-on with thousands of people, maybe there's one or two things that I've figured out. Who knows? You know, I mean, maybe it's worth, right? But mm-hmm. No, sorry, we don't believe in fasting, so you can't speak. Like, wait a second. It just doesn't make any sense. But everything has to be consistent or there's a flaw in the logic. Okay? And so Minerals. Minerals are important, absolutely. But once your body is in balance, you don't need very many minerals. So that's what I do, and that works really well for me. Now, when I have people leave my center, I give them a written six-week plan, and that six-week plan says, eat a big salad every night. And the reason it says that is because I have figured out that the vast majority of people are not capable today of being able to tune into or properly hear their body's messages. It's not that the body stops sending them, it doesn't. It's that we get confused. I mean, most people are completely stuck in their heads. All the stuff that you're talking about. I mean, you know, here's a world-renowned expert. As far as I'm concerned, the man is stuck in his head. It's not, this stuff doesn't make sense from my perspective at all. But this is not coming from someone's body. It's coming from the head. And so what I'm trying to do is get people to the point. My clients here at the center hear me say all the time, you know, what you want to do is get out of your head and into your body. And so you get the orientation, I'll tell them. You know, the single most important goal that I have for you through this process is that you're able to do that by the time you leave or shortly thereafter. You want to be tuning in constantly and double-checking, you know, really considering all the interpretations because, you know, again, whatever happens has no meaning until we give it meaning. And usually because people aren't understanding it, they're giving it meaning that's just not accurate. So is there a need? Again, what will we do in nature? You know, imagine that you knew nothing about nutrition. I like to say this, you know, you go to a family meal with 350-pound Aunt Bertha, and she's sitting there, you're eating your fruit-based diet, and she's sitting there saying, well, honey, that's not healthy. And you're thinking, well, what the hell do you know about what's healthy? You know, look at you, right? Everyone's an expert on nutrition, so this is hard to, it's hard to pretend you don't know anything. Because we've been inundated with information, accurate or not accurate, who knows, but we've been inundated with information our whole lives. Never ending, right? So, if you knew nothing, and you lived in a tropical jungle, the only place on the planet we could live 12 months of the year in our birthday suits, and we are tropical animals, what would you be doing? You've got mangoes and papayas, and more than 50% of the trees here make some kind of fruit. Okay? But how much wild lettuce is there? Have you ever tried eating a leaf of a tree? I mean, would you really spend a bunch of time if you had ripe bananas? Right there?
And that's one of the things that appealed to me about this, and I hope it's the final piece in my jigsaw diet-wise, is that it just gave me permission to stop eating all the stuff that the Hippocrates training gave me, because I don't like sprouts. I don't like lentils, whether they're sprouted or not. I don't like a lot of greens.
No, there's no...
This makes perfect sense to me.
Exactly.
And it was permission to give it up.
There's no need for any of that stuff. And you probably know that isn't raw and never has been. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
He doesn't... If you ask him directly, I don't think he'll lie to you. But he presents himself. He holds himself out as if he were a raw foodist. But he's eaten cooked food every single day of his life.
Right. Well, I know he doesn't look that healthy to me.
No, exactly. Neither. He looks bloated. And he is. Not only that, but, you know, Hippocrates, I call it hypocrites. Hippocrates himself, the doctor, and I don't remember if I ever mentioned this on video, so you may not have heard me say this yet, but he's most famous for having said, first do no harm, and let your food be your medicine, and your medicine thy food. But, you know, I was in Florida on a lecture tour a couple of years ago, and I asked a group of Hippocrates health educators, trained by Hippocrates, what did he say next? Does anyone know what the very next words out of his mouth were after that most famous quotation? Nobody knew. But what Hippocrates said was, but to feed yourself when you're already sick is to feed your sickness. Now, he was saying very clearly, stop eating fast, right? But Hippocrates doesn't promote that. Why not? You know, there's another well-known raw food educator, practitioner out there who runs a center and treats people and charges a lot of money for what he does and is well respected. And he tells people, no, water fasting is dangerous. It's not that, you know, juice fasting is much better. Mm-hmm. Now, we've known each other for 20 years. The last time I saw him, I said, you can't really believe that. You know better than that. And he said, well, he said, yeah, you're right. He said, but it's just such a pain in the ass to take people through water fasts. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, okay, granted, it's true. I mean, it can be a difficult thing to do. Trust me, I know. However, you know, what would be honest and ethical and in integrity would be to say, you know, water fasting is a very powerful thing, but we choose not to do that here. Juice fasting is also beneficial, you know, if you really believe that. And so we offer that instead. But he doesn't say that. He tells his clients that water fasting is not beneficial, but juice fasting is. And then privately, not only does he admit that water fasting is more powerful, but without telling anyone, except his inner circle, who happens to be a good friend of mine, he water fasts himself.
That's just like the doctors doling out pills or chemo, but saying they'd never do it to their family.
Exactly.
Themselves.
Exactly.
It's terrible.
It is terrible. It's, you know, I don't know how people like that can sleep at night.
Mm.
I mean, listen, I'm not perfect. Don't get me wrong. I'm not here to sit in judgment, but I do believe in being completely honest and being in integrity.
Yeah.
And so I wouldn't be doing something, you know, I wouldn't be offering something if I didn't believe in it completely myself.
Okay, one of my next observations, I suppose, was when I started following the 80-10-10 last summer, mm-hmm. I was horrified to put on weight.
Uh-huh.
And I also developed a slight mucus. It was absolutely clear, but I just felt this need to keep clearing my throat.
Uh-huh.
Within 24 hours of fasting, the mucus hasn't come back. So I thought
right.
that was really fast and interesting.
Yeah. Yes.
So I was shocked on eating such a high fruit diet. So I suppose after the fast, I'm a bit concerned, thinking, well, what did I do wrong? And Doug said to me, well, you didn't exercise enough. You
okay.
balance your greens and
yeah.
so on, but obviously I'm not going to go down that route afterwards.
Right. Well, listen, it's again, it's not about that. And, okay, so imagine that you are a typical guy, and what you want to do is you want to have the biggest upper body possible, because that's going to impress girls. Okay? So how are you going to achieve that?
Exercise.
You're going to work out, even, you know, now let's look at exercise and processing food. I mean, one of the things that Doug does, and I believe where you made your mistake to cut right to the chase, is you probably follow his advice to overeat.
Mm.
I mean, he's encouraging
yeah.
people to eat way more
yeah.
than they want to, right?
Mm.
That's again, in my opinion, that is inane. It makes absolutely no sense when all of the evidence is to the contrary. There's hundreds of animal studies that show that when you have an animal's caloric intake, on average it will live twice as long. Scientists today will tell you that the only thing that's been proven to extend someone's lifespan is eating fewer calories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, scientists are clear that when we overeat, we impair our digestion.
Yeah.
So, but people don't like to be in conflict with themselves. So if you want to have the biggest muscles possible, what you're going to do is you're going to overeat. Now, I have some personal experience with this because, let me tell you a quick story. In fact, I think I may have said this on one of the things you've already heard or listened or watched. But I grew 10 inches when I was 14. In 1 year.
Wow.
I look like a stick with a nose. And, you know, my hormones are starting to kick in, right? I'm mm-hmm. desperate wanting to be attractive to girls.
Mm-hmm.
And I was anything but attractive to girls. And so I started working out. And I had an uncle who was my favorite uncle. And he was a star athlete when he was in high school. In college, you know, football, basketball. In fact, my stepfather, who was at that point was in my life for a few years, was also the star athlete, captain of the football team, the basketball team, the baseball team. And so I had these two men who were sort of mentoring me about exercise. And I realized to build muscle, I needed to consume more. And I wanted to put, so I started, I'd come home from school, I'd make a big milkshake with ice cream and eggs. And, you know, I was trying to get as much protein in as I could. And sure enough, I went from being about 120 pounds, at, you know, at 5'10 or something, to being, ultimately, I got myself up to 170 pounds. Okay? And most people probably look much better that way. But if we ever meet in person, you'll be able to verify, I probably have, for a 6 foot tall man, the smallest frame you've ever seen. A tiny, tiny bone structure. Most of the ones coming here have bigger wrists than I do. If you have a caliper, you can actually measure the distance between the bones and your elbow, because no matter how much weight you gain, that distance never changes. Mm-hmm. And you'll see that I have about as small a frame as is possible to have. So what was true for me was I was carrying way more weight than was natural for my frame. Now, there are guys that have giant bone structures. Mm-hmm. In that case, they're going to carry more weight naturally. Okay, but so I know I could pack on weight if I wanted to. And most people would think I looked better, but it didn't feel good. It felt like a burden. And I knew it wasn't natural. I was bogging my body down. And so I ultimately decided, okay, you know, screw it. I mean, if I'm really committed to my health, then I'm really committed to my health. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to listen to my body, which always knows best, and I'm going to eat what my body wants. If processing food takes more energy than anything else we do, and it does, even with the best diet, it takes more energy to process our food than anything else, roughly 50%. What that means is, and this is why people and animals who consume less food consistently live longer, because their bodies are investing much less energy into the process. So if you cut your caloric intake back by 50%, you'd be far better off. Yeah. But wouldn't be able to be as big. Mm-hmm. Okay, how many pictures of can you find with a shirt on? Mm-hmm. See, the point is, it's an ego-based desire to build a big physique. And I understand it because I lived that for a long time myself. Most guys do. You know, again, women think they're the only ones that are affected by the, you know, this bizarre cultural, you know, how we have women today with all Photoshop and makeup and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure you've seen the videos. You take a very average-looking woman, and all of a sudden she's, you know, she's amazingly gorgeous. 2 hours later, when I finish working on her, you know, and they do all the Photoshop. What you're seeing isn't real. Well, it's the same with guys. You know, guys have this standard to live up to, which just isn't. It's not realistic. But you know, we want to do it too, because want to be attractive, and that's ultimately what it comes down to, right?
Okay.
So it's just not natural. There's no reason to do it. You want to eat absolutely no more than your body needs. If you're eating more than you need, you are going to create mucus, and you're going to create all kinds of problems. Okay. And there's another thing I think that's going on with some of these guys. You know, the whole 30 bananas a day thing, I mean, they've taken it to a completely new level of absurdity. Where Billion Rider is actually encouraging people to eat in front of the television so they can, you can be less conscious and eat much more that way. Mm-hmm. No, this is the exact opposite of intelligent advice.
Yeah.
So you want to listen to your body. You want to understand that in nature, the healthiest members of every species, with the exception of the polar species. Now, if you live at the North or South Pole, you better have some body fat to stay warm.
Mm-hmm.
But with the exception of those species, the healthiest members of every species tend to be the leanest members of the species.
Mm-hmm.
There are also some exceptions in places like equatorial, you know, the deserts of Africa, these places where for 6 months everything dries up and animals have to live on their reserves. They have enforced fasts that are broken every once in a while where it rains and all of a sudden there's food, but then there's no food again for 2 or 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So those animals.
No, that makes sense. I can see now what I did and how to do it differently.
Well, it's not just
you're
you.
Right. I was eating far too much fruit.
It's not just you. And you know, the thing is, unfortunately, what zealots will do is they will protect anything. You know, they'll protect at any costs whatever they believe, whatever their doctrine is. So, yeah. For instance, I know for a fact, because I know many people that have this has happened to. The people who go to 30 bananas a day and try to do what they teach, and then find, oh, this doesn't work for me. And then they post it on 30 Bananas a Day, those posts are immediately eliminated.
Yes, I've read some really derogatory, derogatory is not the right word, warnings, I suppose, that actually you're either in or you're alienated.
That's right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, and there's no middle ground. That's very unfortunate. You know, people have defended him saying, well, you know, that's because you don't want to spend too much time bogged down in arguments. Yeah, but how about intelligent discussion? If someone, you know, if a whole bunch of people are saying, hey, this doesn't work for me, well, that's something worth paying attention to, right? But the only views that ever wind up staying up there are those that they agree with.
Well, the 30 bananas a day issue isn't a thing for me because I've never liked bananas.
Right.
So I don't go down that route. But I have checked them out, and it just didn't resonate with me. So
no. That
was it, really.
Right.
Okay, my next point is, and I was fully expecting this, because I fasted lots of times before, only 3 or 4 times on water, 1 7-day, a couple 3 days, and I've done lots of juicing type detoxes and the grape cure and things.
Mm-hmm.
Always had a furry tongue.
Okay.
On day 2, there was a slight greyness to my tongue.
Mm-hmm.
Day 3 and today's day 8, it's been very pale and no
mm-hmm.
fur. So I'm just wondering what that means about my fast so far. And if you have any comment to make.
It's unfortunately, it's difficult to say with any authority. I've not been able to find anything that's really very authoritative on this. You know, Ayurveda and Chinese medicine both have some things to say about the coating of the tongue, but not particularly useful in relation to fasting. It seems to reflect, you know, apparently reflects what's happening in the colon. But I can tell you, for instance, there are many people out there, typically who have little experience with fasting, although there may be some exceptions, who have said, well, when your tongue clears, your fast is done.
Mm.
That means that your system is clean. Mm. And because I've taken so many people through relatively long fasts, I mean, I've taken 120-some people through fasts of 6 weeks or more. And what frequently happens when people are fasting that long, you know, they're not going to break their fast because their tongue clears. They're going to keep fasting.
Yeah.
If, you know, that's what they've decided to do. They've come all the way down here. They've paid for that. That's what they're typically going to do. And what tends to happen is the tongue will clear at some point in the process sometimes, but then usually 2 or 3 days later it gets coated again.
Mm.
So it seems to me it has something to do with working through pockets of material. It's believed to be reflecting what's happening in the colon. But again, I can't say with any certainty that that's actually what it is. It's what we believe it to be. It's quite common for the tongue to get coated and for that coating to change. And so one of the things I do every day is I look at each client's tongue. Again, not because I can say, well, this means that you're doing this, that, or the other thing.
Yeah.
Just to get a sense of how it's changing and try to understand.
Yesterday it looked perfectly pink and healthy, and I thought, that would mean it's time to break. But I think I'm only on day 7, doesn't
right.
feel ready.
So well,
I've continued. And so I'm thinking, well, perhaps there's worse to come.
There is. And again, I mean, I don't know that I know anything about you. I can see your picture here in the photo. You apparently have glasses, and you have a black thing coming out of the left side of your mouth. Microphone. But I don't know how tall you are or how much you weigh.
I'm 5'4", and okay. I weigh 53 kilos, which is overweight for me.
53 kilos. Let me do the math on that.
It's about 110 pounds, I think.
Let's see. 6, 10, 6, 10... 116.6.
Okay.
At 5'3". Yeah.
5'4".
Okay.
A bit.
Yeah. Well, you know, again, depending on frame size.
Very small frame.
Okay. So, yeah, my guess is that most people, I'd have to translate it back into kilos for you, but, you know, what did you say that was? 53.
53.
Yeah. My guess, a 50 would be 110, by the way. So my guess is you probably would be somewhere, ideally, maybe somewhere just below 50. But it's just a guess.
Yeah, I'm aiming for 48.
Well, and really the thing is, I would encourage you to not be attached to that particular number.
Yeah.
Because if you're doing exactly what you need to do, you know, if you're meeting all of your body's needs as well as you possibly can, then your body will find its own ideal weight.
Of course.
There's nothing else you need to do. But by the way, I just remembered, there's another piece I wanted to make sure we covered here. Let's come back for a second to your last question, because, again, you're living in nature, right? Do you have any animals?
Yes.
What animals?
Dogs.
Dogs, okay. So when's the last time you saw any of your dogs wake up and say, okay, 7 o'clock, time for an hour of aerobics, right?
Mm-hmm.
They pump iron? Do they, they go for a jog every evening or do yoga? You know, the animals don't exercise. Mm-hmm. Now, they're physically active, but they never, ever exercise. Mm-hmm. And cats, a cat will sleep on average 16 hours a day.
Mm.
There are brief periods of physical activity because that's what cats do. They see a bird or a squirrel and they chase it. They run up a tree or whatever. But then they go back and lay down again for a while. I mean, so exercise creates free radicals.
Mm.
This is damage which your body, potentially damaging substances that your body has to eliminate. If we were going to be completely honest, what we would have to see is that a moderate level of daily activity is the healthiest thing to do. You never want to stop using your body, right? You know, use it or lose it, right? And so it's true. You know, if you spend a year sitting on your butt and you never get up, then you're gonna lose most of your muscle tone.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably gonna lose your flexibility if you spend that time sitting on a couch or a chair, and you know you're not doing really stretching the muscles as furniture prevents us from doing. So if you stay physically active, I mean, once your body is humming along, you get to a point where maintaining your physical fitness is easy. Yesterday I did a lecture. The last 2 days I completed this longish lecture over 2 days on exercise to my clients here, and some of them were surprised. Because I told them, well, you know, it's been a pretty intense 6 months, you know, my history with the move and everything. And, I really haven't had a chance to do much exercise. But I showed them some stuff, and they're like, wow, you're still really strong and flexible. I'm like, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, in fact, I don't have to do anything to maintain that other than continue moving around.
Okay.
I mean, and that's what's true. And so, you know, this idea, I mean, if we're fruit eaters, you know, if we're truly fruitivorous animals, and I'm pretty confident we are, that we don't have to go do special things. You know, we have to go work out or we're not going to be able to eat fruit. It doesn't make sense. What's true, though, remember, you know, if what you're coming from is this ego-based place of wanting to create a specific physique, and especially if it's a bigger one, which isn't what any women want to do, but it's what many guys do. So the advice is eat more food. Well, if you're eating a lot more fruit, if you're eating way more than you need, well, yeah, in that case, you might have to do more activity to your body to be able to use that excess sugar. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't make sense in the first place.
No.
Both of the activities, both eating and exercising, use a lot of our body's energy. So I'm not anti-exercise, but but what I'm saying is, yes, you want to be physically active. And I'm doing whatever you enjoy. You know, if you enjoy doing yoga, do yoga.
Yeah.
If you're riding a bike or dancing or whatever it might be, do those things.
But it's for enjoyment.
Exactly. I mean, well, you know, let me back up. In fact, I know I did say, probably in the full-day seminar, maybe somewhere else in there, that you don't need to exercise at all. So this is interesting. Now, I've amended that, and that happened starting 6.5 years ago. We moved to Panama, and our internship program changed to include 5 times a week exercise classes with me. And I was horrified to find out just how out of shape the average person coming down was.
Mm-hmm.
It was pitiful. I mean, 20-year-old men that couldn't do 3 push-ups. Mm-hmm. You know, women that couldn't hang from the bar for 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Pitiful. I mean, if we lived in nature, these people would starve if they had to go to the tree. They wouldn't be able to get any food. You know, they have to wait for whatever fell out of the tree, which sometimes works and sometimes doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
So what I realized was, okay, you know, here's what's true. In order to be as healthy as possible, you have to have the musculature to support your entire body, because your body doesn't work properly if you don't carry enough muscle. So you do need, many people do need to exercise to get to that point. But if their body is clean and efficient and they're eating properly, once they get to that point, maintaining it is relatively easy. You know, again, the cat can easily jump onto the kitchen counter unless it's very small or very old.
Mm-hmm.
That's like you or I jumping onto the roof of a 2-story house. And your cat never, ever does any exercise.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. My next question is about, for women only, obviously, periods.
Yeah.
Fasting during a period. Well, obviously, fasting makes you feel weak.
Uh-huh.
When you're on your period, you're losing blood, and some women feel weak during that period anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't necessarily have picked a time to fast when I thought, oh, I'm on my period. I might have thought maybe, I don't know, maybe I would have thought it's the most natural thing to do because the body's purging. I don't know, but my period came early, and I just wondered if that's one of the reasons why I felt so very, very weak.
And
if you had any thoughts on women fasting during that time?
Sure. It could have something to do with how weak you felt, but not necessarily. Many people are going to feel that weak anyway, whether they're having their period or not. In fact, many men will experience the same thing, and as you pointed out, they're probably not having their period.
Mm-hmm.
There's absolutely no harm in fasting during your monthly cycle. It's not like you should fast then. It's not like you shouldn't fast then.
Mm.
You fast when your body tells you to fast, or in the case of a longer fast, when you can plan it, when you can make it happen.
And if you're on a long fast anyway, it would probably happen 2 or 3 times.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's certainly going to happen at least once.
Mm.
For most women, fasting 21 days or more. It's likely to happen. It often will come early. Often, of course, if I've got a building full of women, in Panama we had 14 guest beds and we would be 70% women. They would often get in sync. Yep, if she's there long enough, it's not unusual. And it's not unusual for it to come a little bit early, and it's not unusual at all. You may find, if you keep fasting, that you may wind up having discharge again later, which some women are confused. At first they'll say, well, I'm having another period. I just had my period last week.
Hmm.
Well, that's not going to happen. But there may be vaginal discharge that's not related to the dropping of the egg and the lining. It's just your body eliminating.
Okay. Well, I did think, actually, a period is purging anyway.
It is.
So, actually, perhaps it goes with a fast.
Well, there's certainly no reason that it would be contraindicated.
Okay.
Absolutely not. And you're absolutely right. You know, in a really clean system, there will be little, if any, evidence of the monthly cycle. There'll be no bloating, there'll be no cramps, there'll be no emotional swings, and there'll be little, if any, blood.
Mm-hmm.
All of those things indicate that the body is toxic and it is attempting to cleanse itself.
Mm. Okay. My next question is about statistics, I suppose. I've been taking my blood sugar, my pH, my pulse, my body temperature, my blood pressure, and my everything is fine. I've always had healthy low blood pressure, good pulse, no problems with blood sugar, but my pH has always been about 7 point something.
You're taking the pH of what?
Just the litmus test. So I've done the saliva and the urine.
Okay.
But on the fast, I'm shocked at how low it is. It's saying dangerously acidic. And I thought, how can that be? Is it because I've had a month more or less on oranges or what?
No, although that was a bad idea.
Not every meal, but a lot of oranges.
Okay, that's a different story.
Yeah.
But
I've never had a low pH before, so...
Yeah, but listen, don't worry about it. It's okay. Absolutely nothing to be concerned about. You know, the truth is, the only pH that would really be useful to be checking, and you probably don't want to check this, would be your blood.
Mm.
Okay? Your urine and saliva are going to vary, especially your urine. I mean, we expect your urine to vary tremendously as you're eliminating toxins through your urinary tract.
Mm.
So this is a waste product. Who cares how acidic it is?
Yeah, that's
and I
true.
I suppose if the pH gets low enough or high enough, bases actually burn more than acids.
Mm.
So if we become too alkaline, which isn't going to happen, by the way, but if it did, in either case, that might actually burn you at some point along the exit path that wouldn't be comfortable. As long as that doesn't happen, and even if it does, and it's not really going to hurt you, it may not feel good, but your body's just eliminating what it needs to eliminate. And saliva as well, especially in a fast, when we are eliminating, you know, there's tons of mucus, there's lots of things being secreted, and it's not surprising for that to change that way. I don't think you have anything at all to be concerned about.
Okay, because following the Hippocrates, what they would say is, right, now you need a week on potassium broth. But I'm assuming that even if you had a client who was or had whatever test that you did, a pH test, that's not a course that you would recommend.
It's a course I would absolutely not recommend ever under any circumstances.
Okay.
I pretty much disagree with virtually everything that Hippocrates does.
Do you drink tea, by the way?
No.
Would you have a herbal tea or a piece of ginger in warm water or anything like that?
Typically not. I would generally stay away from ginger. I have made two or three exceptions over the last several years where, for myself, I mean, I never really desire this. It does happen every once in a while. I'm about to go on lecture tour. I'll be speaking at three or four raw food restaurants. Usually they want to feed me. Usually I try to pick something that is, as non-harmful as possible. But so much of what's on the menus of these places are stuff that make me not feel very good.
Yeah.
The cleaner your body is, the more it's going to react to stuff. So my body doesn't really do very well with ginger. Every once in a while, I'll do an Asian-style meal for friends, for clients, or, not people that are fasting, obviously, but people that are visiting. And I'll include a tiny bit of ginger in one or two dishes. But my body personally says, stay away from that stuff as much as possible. Herbal tea, when I was in Panama, sometimes I'd be in Panama City. I had meetings a couple times at this hotel. In the lobby there was just a good central meeting place. It was always freezing inside. And so there were a couple occasions in the last few years that I would order a cup of some herbal tea just because, I would always forget. I mean, like, I needed to bring an overcoat. Here you are in the truck, and you walk by, and it's like a friggin' ice box.
That's the aircon, isn't it?
It's why they insist on making it so cold, I'll never understand, although I suppose it's because the average overweight person is more comfortable that way. Didn't work so well for me. So I did use herbal tea on a few occasions just to warm up. I suppose I could have just had a cup of hot water, but I did use some herbal tea. But I probably had herbal tea, a total of half a dozen times or so in 5 years.
Okay. Because, I drink rooibos and green tea because it's good for us. And I was just thinking, well, would I still take those, but with cool water?
Well,
it's a habit I've grew into, I was not brought up with tea or coffee, but when I became a salesperson on the road, it was disrespectful to turn down their hospitality. So I learnt to drink a cup of tea.
Yeah, I understand.
So it was just one of those habits. So.
Fortunately for me, I mean, one of the things that actually started me on my path, and I know this could not come up in the stuff that you have, because I didn't even put this together until maybe 2 years ago. I started thinking, the first thing, I may have talked about this, the first thing I realized I was addicted to was coffee.
Okay.
But what happened was, and the day I realized it, I stopped drinking it. I was like, I was not willing to be addicted to anything. And so I was going back one day for my fourth or fifth cup of coffee before lunch. And I realized, shit, I'm depending on this stuff. And so that was it. I threw the cup away. I never had another cup. I've had coffee on two or three occasions where I was using it as a drug because I needed to drive somewhere in the middle of the night and I didn't want to die.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was like I never felt good. I felt bad, but I thought it was better than dying. And I made a commitment that I needed to. So I needed to stay awake. But it wasn't until after I gave up coffee, I mean, as soon as I gave up coffee, what happened was that's when I realized how sick I was because I'd been propping myself up with coffee. If you remember, I was suffering from chronic fatigue syndrome and a bunch of other things. But the coffee, all that caffeine, was propping me up, so I didn't realize how exhausted I really was until I stopped drinking it. So it actually had a huge role to play in my whole transition, although I didn't know it, realize it at the time. And so, but for me, because I realized there was an addiction there, I did start out by switching to like strong herbal teas, like Bengali. What's it called? There was one that's had sort of strong flavor. I was using that, and then eventually, I weaned myself off that too. I thought, you know what? I mean, I really don't want to do anything like that.
Yeah, sure. Okay. The other question I had with regard to my personal fast is my sleep is getting worse night on night. And I swear last night I didn't sleep at all.
Yeah.
I don't want to reinforce the fact that I'm, by saying out loud to the universe, I'm not a great sleeper, but...
In the past, I've had trouble with sleeping.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, that's that way you're not bringing it into the present. In the past, I've had problems with sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
That's a way to say anything. That's the truth. That's the truth. You don't know what it's going to be like. So if you say, I have problems sleeping, then you're making it true today where it might not have been true today.
Yeah.
Anyway, I understand. It's very common.
Okay.
It's very common for people to have trouble sleeping, and I can explain... at least partly why that is. I think this is actually most of it. There's two things. First of all, if you're resting as completely as you should be,
mm-hmm.
you see, I mean, let's look at a normal day for you when you're not fasting, right?
Mm-hmm.
You get up, you have your morning routine, whatever that looks like. Maybe you meditate, do some exercise.
Mm-hmm.
I know you work hard, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm sure you have other things that you'd like to do.
Mm-hmm.
So you stay pretty active from whatever time you wake up in the morning until you turn off your light at 9 or 10 or 11 o'clock at night. Yeah?
Usually 1.
Okay. That's too late. But okay, so you stay pretty active until 1, okay, or midnight, whatever it is. You turn off your light, your body, your whole body, your brain, you're exhausted. You need all those hours of sleep that you're going to be able to get between then and whenever you need to start again the next day. You're going to need sleep the whole time. But if you're resting all day
mm-hmm.
and you're not processing food, all of a sudden, you may only need, by the time you're a week into a fast, 5 or 6 hours of sleep.
Mm.
Okay, now there's another piece. So that's one piece, and it's significant. But there's another piece, and that is that because we're diurnal animals, all right, our bodies are governed by the cycles of light and dark, our hormonal cycles, by cycles of light and dark. As soon as it begins to get dark, what happens? Well, everything begins to slow down.
Yeah.
Right, your whole body starts to move into a more restful state. What does that mean? That means that as the body slows down its normal processes, with darkness. Energy is being liberated, which can now be used for cleansing and healing.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't available before. Okay, mm-hmm. So you maybe if you think back on times in your life when you've been sick before, a cold or a flu or whatever,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've noticed, but oftentimes, like in the middle of the day, you actually might feel fine.
Yeah.
But and then as it gets, you know, in the evening, you start to not feel
mm-hmm.
so good.
Mm-hmm.
That's because with darkness and the slowing down of your body, there's energy available to cleanse and heal. And that's what mm-hmm. all symptoms are. And so the same thing is happening now, mm-hmm. only even more so.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's
yeah.
more energy available to cleanse and heal. And at night, symptoms are often worse for people fasting. So the thing is, you know, if you're resting as much as possible, I mean, you know, really, the ideal way to conduct any fast, in my opinion, is like every other animal. That we're not going to improve on nature. Now, we may be smarter than they are in some ways intellectually, but we're much stupider than they are in almost every other, because they live in their virtually infinitely intelligent bodies, and we don't. We're not accessing the intelligence of those bodies. And the intelligence of your body is mm-hmm. way greater than the intelligence of your mind. Okay, your body knows exactly what it needs all the time. And it's sending messages that we're just not able to get very well. So, yeah. Right,
we'll okay, because that's been my only stress this week, really, is that I'm not sleeping in the day, and I'm sleeping very poorly at night. And last week, although in the morning, I don't feel tired.
Okay, well, there
I
you go.
Because I've rested, so exactly. It just reminded me what my mother used to say. It doesn't matter if you can't sleep. You're in the dark. You're having a rest. You'll
exactly.
still get some benefit.
She was absolutely right, and that's exactly what you want to do, is lie in bed with your eyes closed, rest as comfortably as you can, and don't worry about it. You know, if you're planning on fasting again tomorrow, you know, right, until you have to get back to work, what's true is that all you need to do tomorrow is nothing.
Yeah.
How much energy you need to do that? You know, what if you're exhausted because you didn't sleep? So what? Mm-hmm. All you need to do is rest anyway and drink water. You need to be drinking enough water.
Yeah.
But all you need to do is rest and drink water. So there's really nothing to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
And understand that your body may very well need less sleep, and that's not unusual for it to wind up sleeping less, and that it's typical as well to have more symptoms going on that will interrupt sleep when you're fasting. You know, if you're resting as comfortably as possible during the day, if you get to the point where you really are deficient in sleep, what will happen is you'll fall asleep if you're resting.
Yeah.
If you're down with your, I mean, during the day, if you're lying down with your eyes closed, which is ideal if you're not drinking, you'll fall asleep if you need to.
Mm. I mean, like you, I've always thought sleep is the weak link in my health protocol.
Yeah.
I'm just not tired even when I go to bed at 1 o'clock.
I'm
too wired.
That's probably because you've already gone past the point
absolutely,
where your body has energy, and now you're running on adrenaline. You're gonna wear yourself out. I mean, this is how people create chronic fatigue.
Yeah. Okay, that's answered that one. Thank you. Sure. Next one. How do you spell this word? I've heard you, or I don't know whether it's a person or what, but you've mentioned it several times, Occam's razor.
Occam. Occam was a person. O-C-C-A-M. Occam was an Arab.
O-C-C-A-M.
Yeah, he was an Arab who lived centuries ago.
Uh-huh.
And Occam's razor is an accepted precept of science. All other things being true, all things being equal, the simplest explanation is usually true.
Okay.
I first came across that in watching, what is that movie called? Contact. Have you seen that movie?
No, I haven't.
Jodie Foster?
I'm going to download it.
It's a great movie. Yeah. It's not about health, but it's a great movie. And they mentioned this precept, and it clicked with me. I'm like, aha, that's important.
Yeah. Okay, and how do you spell his surname? Just R-A-Z-E-R?
No.
Razor?
No. Occam is his surname.
Ah, right.
A razor is a law.
Ah, right. So you're saying Occam's razor, as in
Yes.
Jesus' commandment. Exactly. Okay, got it. I thought his name was Occam Razor.
No.
Okay.
His name is Occam, so it's Occam's, like the razor of Occam.
Okay, all right. Yeah. I'll look that up then.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
I had Bell's palsy twice 6 years ago.
Uh-huh.
Apparently, it was the cold attacked a nerve in my ear, which apparently is quite normal in northern France, from the cold.
Mm-hmm.
Would fasting have helped me?
Because yes.
I can tell you the pain was unbearable. If we'd had a gun in the house, I swear I would have shot myself.
I'm glad you didn't have a gun.
Yeah, exactly. It was worse than childbirth.
Wow.
But since then, and it lasted for 4 months, I resisted taking the steroids, but they said your brain is expanding. And it felt like my head was in a vice. But yeah. I did, they gave me like a year's worth of painkillers, which I took for about 2 weeks until it was bearable.
Right.
But
I saw the rest on the street.
Yeah. I've since, they cost a damn fortune as well, so I handed them back. But I've since learned a lot more about Bell's palsy. I mean, I'd never even heard of it when I got it. I thought I'd have a stroke.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering if, would fasting have helped with something like that?
Yeah, absolutely. Have you heard of the China study?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I've read it.
Okay. Well, although I haven't seen him in years, I know Colin Campbell. We've met at several health conferences, and we've sat and had lunch together, etc. And when I first met Colin, he had Bell's palsy.
Mm, okay.
And when I saw him again, a year or two later, it was gone. And he had fasted in the interim. And it disappeared with fasting. You know, again, fasting is different than any other regime or treatment or anything we can do because it's the one thing that I know of that's not attempting to, in some way, manipulate or suppress a symptom. Although many practitioners would say, well, there are things not doing that. I mean, most people would say, herbs don't do that. Of course they do. Herbs are all toxic. They're all toxic, and nothing toxic can make you well. Nothing boosts your immune system. It just makes your immune system work harder because you put something toxic in, right? So, but, you know, most people don't understand this. But fasting, we're simply getting out of the way as efficiently as we can so the body can heal itself.
Yeah.
So if something can be healed, if it's possible to heal, I mean, obviously, you know, if you cut your arm off in an accident, that's not going to heal if you fast.
Yeah.
Right. But if something can be healed, fast is always going to be the most effective way because it's simply the most effective way to get out of the way.
Yeah.
So there's more energy to heal.
I mean, I hope I never have to put it to the test, but I just cannot imagine if I think back to how bad I felt that fasting would have helped me because I just wanted to end my life.
Right.
It was that bad. But
to
say to somebody, you know, fast, and it might take a week or more, I don't know.
Well,
I don't know whether I could convince myself to fast.
I mean, some people are hard to convince.
Mm.
I understand. It can be very painful and difficult, and it's not just that situation. There's other ones. But it is always the best way. And usually, severe pain tends to decrease pretty quickly with a fast. There are some kinds of symptoms that may exacerbate before they get better as the body increases its cleansing and healing activity.
Mm.
But usually when someone's already experiencing severe pain, that tends to shift pretty quickly. And it's shocking the variety of things because, again, this is like a huge paradigm shift for virtually everybody because we've all grown up in a culture where we've got something going on and we find some way to treat it. But those treatments are always just dealing with the symptoms. And so along, you know, we learn about fasting and we have trouble sort of getting our head around this at first. But wait a second, how can this be? How can this be good for that? How can that be good for this? We're just getting out of the way.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. I mean, I've got literally thousands of stories. And, you know, not all of them are very dramatic, but there are enough of them that are dramatic, and all across the board, every kind of condition you can... Here's a quick one. I had a client who just, since I've been here in Costa Rica, a Danish woman who was in her mid-50s, she was just about to turn 56 or something, she'd broken her leg back in May, and it was a pretty bad break. She went through months of physical therapy. When she showed up 5 months later, she still could not extend her right leg completely, couldn't straighten it, and she could only bend it maybe, 35 degrees. Very little flexibility there. And she was in significant pain from below her knee all the way up to her right buttock. She was in a lot of pain. So, and the question, her daughter had contacted me and said, well, this is my mother's situation. Could this help her? I'm like, absolutely. Absolutely. They were a little bit dubious, but decided to get, because medicine wasn't working. And here she was, had great doctors, and she had these wonderful physical therapists, and it wasn't getting any better. She came and fasted 21 days. She left with the ability to extend her leg, to flex all the way back, bend it as far as she could bend her left one, and with no pain whatsoever.
Okay. My next question about my own fast is, I don't suffer with bile issues. I've never had indigestion or heartburn, except for the last 2 months of pregnancy. But what I've noticed in the last, not last night, but the two previous nights, I couldn't lie on my tummy, which is the way that I sleep, because I felt like there was bile. And then it got me thinking about the stomach acid and intrinsic factor and what was going on. Luckily, it seems to have gone now, but I guess that was just my stomach cleansing.
Well, could have been. It's sometimes it's difficult to identify exactly where these things are. We talk about the belly or the gut, and we're looking at roughly 32 feet of digestive tract. And I would have said 10 years ago, well, if you're nauseous, it's because something's upsetting your stomach. And I can tell you now that bile is dumped into your system, into the duodenum, below the stomach. So, and yet I know people sometimes when they're fasting and their liver needs to cleanse, which is for most people, some people get very sensitive to the presence of bile in their otherwise empty duodenum or small intestine, and they feel nauseous. And the quickest path to eliminate that bile is through the mouth, not through the anus. And so it will often come up. Or I should say it will sometimes come up. It's not a thing that happens to most people. But I just had a guy who fasted with me for the third time in the last 10 years. And this time around, he had no bile. Last fast, he spent a week vomiting bile. It's a nasty thing. But, you get this intense nausea, and all of a sudden this stuff comes up from below the stomach, which is interesting because, theoretically, the pyloric valve is designed to prevent anything from coming up. But your body is smart enough to know, let's get this crap out as quickly as possible. So, what you were experiencing last night, or whatever it was, might have been bile. It might have been some cleansing going on in the stomach. It could have been something happening in your small intestines. It can be a little bit hard sometimes to distinguish one from the other.
Yeah, I didn't have nausea. In fact, I felt absolutely fine until I lay down.
Yeah,
I was horizontal. But I just turned over, and I just thought it was really interesting because I've never had any experience of heartburn it wasn't even heartburn, it was just acid.
Well, and you say it was acid, but, again, tell me if you can again, what was the actual feeling that you had?
Just that something liquid that tasted very acidy was moving up my chest and my throat.
Okay, got it.
So I turned over.
Got it. Okay. So, yes, that sounds like acid reflux.
Yeah.
And that's probably not bile, because if bile had come up, that would have been a more violent reaction, because again, it has to come through the pyloric valve. And so you know that that's happening. But yeah, this is something going on in the stomach, or perhaps, I mean, why this happens, I'm not sure. But it's not unusual, and it will stop.
I just wonder if it was connected to the low pH and whether I should dilute it by taking more water.
Well, most people do not drink enough water, and while they're fasting, and so that might very well help. But it's a possibility.
Okay, well, that's all my questions with regard to my personal fast. I had half a dozen other questions, depending on how you're doing for time.
I'll take some more questions. I mean, we're going a little long. That's okay.
Thank you. I was interested in researching hunger strikes versus fasting, because it seemed to me, having looked at a lot of hunger strikers, some of them die so darn quickly.
Yeah.
I'm guessing, I don't know, I've not seen pictures, but I'm guessing if that happens, it's simply they didn't have the reserves. Because, you know, to die after 41 days when people fast for 60 days or 100 days just seemed a bit absurd to me.
Well,
I just wondered if you had any thoughts on that.
Yeah. Now, are you talking about that people who would be just resting? Would they be active? So just resting. Okay. I mean, yeah, it's probably a question of reserves, but it could be something else. I mean, people do die when fasting. There's, you know, again, I'm sure many people think that I continue to say you don't want to fast on your own just so I can get more business. But the fact is, I know personally of three people who died while fasting on their own, and that likely wouldn't have happened had they had proper supervision. And, you know, and unfortunately, many people think that because they're an alternative practitioner or a doctor or a health coach, maybe they're qualified to fast on their own. But it's probably not so. You know, and the chances are good that people are going to be fine. I mean, statistically, the average person would be perfectly fine. Unfortunately, you know, if you're that person, then it's 100% fatality, right? Mm-hmm. So there are things that can come up, and it's hard to say. I know a woman in New York City whose boyfriend was roughly 35 at the time this happened. He was in his second week of his fast. All of a sudden, started feeling terrible. They rushed him to the hospital, and he died shortly after he got there. And no one knows what happened. But, you know, had there been experienced supervision, chances are pretty high it wouldn't have come to that. There was a woman in Australia 2 years ago who fasted on her own. In fact, Durian Ryder's roommate. And I've had a couple of clients from Australia that knew these people, died. I forget how far into her fast she was. It wasn't 41 days. It might have been 2 weeks. So there can be things that can come up, and it's really important to understand what is and what isn't okay. It's entirely possible that someone with very, very limited reserves wouldn't be able to go 6 weeks. I don't know that I could go 6 weeks. I tend to run between 5 and 6% body fat. You know, you're living on body fat, and there isn't much. I don't know. Although I have, I mean, yeah, I don't know that I've ever fasted anyone quite as lean as me. There aren't that many people. Most of the people I see, you know, the leanest of them tend to be 8, 9, 10% body fat. And I've taken people like that 6 weeks on many occasions without any real problem, although they tend to get pretty scary looking by the time they're finished. So it's, you know, it's possible someone starved to death, although most people do have at least 6 weeks of reserves, and often more than that.
Just out of curiosity, would you, bearing in mind you've worked and now got a clean body, would you accept a blood transfusion?
That's
a good
question.
You can have a saline drip or coconut water instead, but if you're not conscious, you can't say that.
Exactly. Yeah, I would. Yeah, I mean, if let me put it this way, I would tell, if I was conscious, I would say no blood transfusion unless, you know, there's really a strong belief that I'm dying without it. Now, so maybe you have some blood standing by, but I would, you know, let's give my body a chance. Now, in my case, I would say, you know, it's very unlikely I would ever get a blood transfusion, although who knows? Losing the blood, maybe it becomes necessary. Yeah. Right? I knew a young man who was, what was his religion?
I know the one you mean.
I can't remember now. But anyway, he...
begins with J.
He took, was it Jehovah's Witness?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that's right. He took a fall. Fell down some steps onto a tile floor and smashed his head, lost a lot of blood. And the hospital called his wife and said, you know, he's got a no blood transfusion card in his wallet. Mm-hmm. And she said, yes, that's right. Don't have a blood transfusion. Mm-hmm. And he probably would have died as a result.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, there may be times when maybe you're better off getting a blood transfusion than, you know, than likely dying. But I would prefer not to have a blood transfusion.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And I feel the same. I'm in thinking, the cleaner that I'm getting, the more I'm making plans for things like that.
Yeah.
Okay, do you still run your permaculture course, by the way?
We haven't done
obviously
one.
It's in the new place, but...
Yes, we haven't done one yet. I won't be planning one for a while because... Okay. What I realized I needed to do, after running at close to full occupancy for a long time, there were two things that happened. A, the economy, as you know, took a nosedive about 3 years ago. And that probably would have been bad enough. Unfortunately... Around the same time, and it's probably been longer ago than that now, the story hit the news, and unfortunately was promoted by people, a person who considers himself a competitor of mine, and some of his many followers, about what happened to a young diabetic woman who fasted with me, who self-medicated with insulin. Overdosed on it, was taken to the hospital, died 2 days later. I was convicted of practicing medicine without a license. Mm-hmm. And this, unfortunately, this story has been publicized by raw foodists, a raw foodist who considers me his competition.
Okay.
And that has hurt badly. And so what I'm realizing now is I really need to be putting more energy into marketing, just getting the word out again, because unfortunately, and I'm still not sure how to deal exactly with, you know, with this negative PR, but we're working on that. And so what I'm going to be doing is spending more time traveling and speaking. The permaculture courses only happen while we're not open for fasting, but for the next year, all of my breaks are actually planned. I'll be on a lecture tour somewhere.
Okay.
So we'll do them again at some point, but I'm not sure exactly when that's going to happen.
And are you planning an accredited course for students? Because I'd love to learn more from you.
Yeah. You mean
outside
the stuff
the course that
now?
I bought, yes.
Well, I don't know anything about how to get that accreditation. I mean, that's probably a good idea and something to work on. You know, I think it was true. Just thinking about this logically. You know, and I mean, I have no one to point fingers at except myself. I've been teaching this stuff for a long time. Most of the people who encounter this work, my work, say, wow, this is amazing. Mm-hmm. And yet I've really never done much to get the word out there. The first thing I need to do is get a book published.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's credibility more than anything else. And once that's done, then it would probably be easier to take the next step and get that kind of credit. I would love to do it. And
of course, if you had a team of people, at least one in different countries, they'd be doing, you know, it's like only one person can do so much, but it could spread the word so much more if you had a team of people.
It's a great idea. You know, if you have any more thoughts about that, I would love to work with you. In fact, it's something I wanted to mention to you because This Danish woman, there were two Danish women, and the woman that I mentioned to you and her daughter came and fasted with me. They were blown away by the process. They're health practitioners. They were blown away by what happened, and they've asked me to come to Denmark. And it's been a long time since I've been in Europe, but I'm working now on seeing if I can revive contacts or find other people willing to put things on. In the past, I've spoken in England many times.
Mm-hmm.
That one of those events was actually videotaped in London.
Mm-hmm.
I used to speak in London and Manchester and Edinburgh and Ireland and Amsterdam and Sweden and Finland, Stockholm and Arnhem and a few other places. Anyway, I'm working now on setting up events. And the Denmark events are basically being set up for me. I'm looking for someone in Sweden. I'm talking to some people in England. But, if you have any interest,
yeah,
I'd love to come do something with you in France.
Okay. Because, I do retreats here.
Mm-hmm.
But it's usually for people who are interested in becoming a vegetarian or transitioning to a vegan or wanting raw food prep classes. And so what I'm personally going through is far too radical for them.
Well,
at the moment.
I think you said something to me similar once before. And you know what? I've encountered that idea many times before, and maybe it's true, but it hasn't been my experience because, I think what many people find is that transitioning to a vegetarian diet, for instance, or a vegan diet, a conventional vegetarian vegan diet, that's a lot of work. Like all of a sudden, they have to read everything, everywhere they go, they have to ask lots of questions. There's lots of things they have to avoid. There's nothing easier than eating the way I teach. I mean, it's much easier than a conventional raw food diet. It's much easier than a Hippocrates diet. There's no work involved. I don't spend 20 minutes a day preparing food.
Yeah. But minutes, it's hours for Hippocrates type people.
Exactly.
I've reflected a lot in the last few days about, my background and training and thinking, why did I sit on the fence for so long calling myself a high raw vegan? Why didn't I just bloody well get on? I wasn't ready, obviously.
Yeah.
And I didn't have the courage, and I hadn't done the education. And in the last 6 months, I've really grown. I've got a question I'm going to send to you by email about healthy blood sugar, pH, pulse, body temperature, blood pressure, etc. Because obviously, everything that I look at, I'm thinking, but the statistics on the internet and in the books are taken from sick people. Just wanted to know if, from a healthy person's point of view, if you had a different set of figures I could work from. So I'll just send that to you by email.
Sure.
And if you had any thoughts on live blood testing, is that something, as part of a health regime? I know they don't do it in nature, and my friend keeps saying, why are you looking for problems? Who would take their blood, do a live blood analysis? But I don't know. It's a good thing to check you're on the right path.
Yes and no. Again, the problem is always an interpretation. I mean, I don't think there's no harm itself in, you're talking about dark field microscopy. Yes?
Yes, yeah, sorry.
There's no harm in doing that. Now, there is something to be wary of. You need to be sure of who is doing the actual analysis, because it's very easy to misconstrue the data. And some people do this. Some people may be doing this because they don't know any better. Other people are doing this because they want to try to sell you a bunch of supplements.
Exactly. Yeah.
And unfortunately, this is rampant. This is used as a tool. It's like anything else. Any tool can be used how you want to use it. Personally, I'm not really interested in these kinds of diagnostics, although I believe that, because most people are, if I could offer them here and show people coming in, this is how it looks here, and then compare it later on, look at how it is here, there would be a huge difference, and that would help people, who need that support, right, who need to be convinced. I mean, for the most part, I tell people, forget about that stuff. How do you feel, right? How do you feel?
Yeah.
What's going on in your body? That's, for me, that's all I'm worried about. The other piece is, and this is true, I mean, again, I'd have to think about, and I haven't. I haven't really thought that much about dark field microscopy, but I don't think it would be too much different than the problems that are inherent in typical blood testing. Right? And it's a whole different thing. But you get a blood test, and what is that? It's a photograph of what's in your bloodstream right now. Right? It's a snapshot of what's happening this moment. Well, for instance, let's say that you were concerned about cholesterol. And so you complete your fast, and you say, I'm going to go get a cholesterol test. Well, chances are exceptionally good that your cholesterol will be high right after fasting. Why? Because cholesterol is a large portion of the plaque in your arteries. And most people have plaque in their arteries, and if you've been eating a conventional vegetarian and vegan diet, you know, until recently, I can almost guarantee you there's plaque in your arteries. And so as your body immediately begins to break that plaque down, because one of the most important jobs there is ensuring proper blood flow to the brain. So got to get these arteries cleaned out. As the body immediately begins to do that, this plaque is liberated and is circulating in your bloodstream until your body finishes processing it out. I've always told people you probably want to wait a month after you leave the center, after refeeding, before you go get blood tested. Now, you're going to ask me via email, and I can answer you via email, but just to give you a sense of it, you know, people are concerned about B12 levels. Like, I got my B12 test, and it was really low. Right? I'm all free. Well, okay, you're a vegan. What does that mean? That means you're consuming a fraction as much B12 as someone who's eating animal products. Is it a problem? I mean, you know, of course you're going to have less B12 circulating in your bloodstream. But how much B12 is circulating in your bloodstream was never the issue in the first place. The question is, how much B12 is being assimilated into your cells? And the fact that it's circulating in your bloodstream does not suggest that your body is actually able to use it.
Yeah.
So circulating levels of anything aren't necessarily the best indicator. And my guess is, in a similar way, you know, again, it comes back to what I said to you earlier, you know, it always comes down to interpretation. So although there's no harm in getting a look using dark field microscopy, we need to be sure that we're not misinterpreting what we see. Oh, this looks like this, you know, and maybe it's not that at all.
Yeah, and I think you're right that the key thing is that most of these people are going to point out to mineral deficiencies and then sell you something. And you really need to have, say, a blood test, if you were going to go down that route, every day for a week to get a real accurate picture of what's going on.
Or perhaps for a month or two.
Yeah.
Maybe not every day, but, you know, but periodically over a long course of time to actually see how things are changing. Mm-hmm. This is especially true for anybody who has recently changed their diet or fasted. You know, any significant shift. I mean, it may be that that snapshot approach, you know, again, assuming that we're interpreting it. So, you know, the idea that high circulating levels of B12 is a good thing, not necessarily true. Maybe high circulating levels of B12 indicate that the body's not assimilating any of it. So it's all in the bloodstream.
Yeah.
Right? You know, it all comes down to interpretation. But if we were interpreting it correctly, then those kinds of analytic approaches might be useful for someone who hasn't made any significant changes to their regime. But if someone's changed their diet or has been fasting, you know, or, you know, juice fast, whatever, I mean, anything that's a change from their ordinary, there are going to be some things happening. And looking at the blood at that point, that doesn't tell us where the body is. That just points out that the body's in the process of transition.
Yeah.
We have to understand that, though.
Okay. Well, thank you, Lauren. You've been an absolute star. I really appreciate it. You've put my mind to rest about certain personal issues, and you've added to my knowledge, so cheers. And hopefully, if we can do something in July, I'll get to meet you in person and learn even more. So
that would be awesome. I hope so, too. It would be great. And listen, you know, in the meantime, if more questions come up, feel free to email them to me. I'll be happy to help you in any way I can.
I will do. Thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks, you too.
All right. Bye-bye.